Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Screw the Stigma. My name is Afra and thank you so much for tuning in this week. Like I always say, my podcast is about breaking societal stigmas and expectations so we can live a happier and fulfilled life that we want to live. And if you'd like to hear more from me and see some interesting content, you can follow me on Instagram at Screw the Stigma Podcast and on Facebook as well at Screw the Stigma Podcast. And you can find this episode on YouTube in video form, Screw the Stigma Podcast on YouTube. And that'll really help me out because I do put in a lot of effort in editing these videos and they take up quite some time. So do check them out and leave me a comment saying what would you like to be improved as well as what would you like to see next. And you know, if you're listening to this in the audio form and you like to send in your feedback or anything that you would like to say, please feel free to send me a message on Facebook or on Instagram. I love feedback and I would love to hear from you. I would like to thank everybody who's tuning in every week and listening to me. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it and it really means a lot to me and, you know, it really pushes me to keep going. And on that note, I want to move on to this week's podcast. In this day and age where everything is moving so fast and we are always on the go, one thing that everybody suffers with is burnout. You know, especially if you're doing a job that you don't like or if you are constantly working without setting any boundaries for yourself, we often find ourselves in a state of exhaustion where we don't want to do anything. And not only the fact of work, but anything in our lives because it just leaves us so drained out. Today, I have Dr. Michaela Clark with me today, and we had a very interesting conversation about burnout as well as women's health. It was Women's International Day last week, and that's what I really want to focus on is women's health because society has told women that we need to always be on the go and not take care of ourselves. You know, because like women are told to be wives, we are told to be mothers, and we are told to be, you know, always doing everything, household chores, taking care of people, where we often don't end up taking care of ourselves, which is why this topic is very important. With everything that's going around in the world with women, all the harm that's been going around, I think it's really important for us to stop and take a look at our health. But this is not only for women in general, but for everyone, because we are on the constant go where we don't think about ourselves and think about how am I doing today? And that's the most important thing. So with that note, I'm going to cut to the podcast now. Today, I have Dr. Michaela Clark with me. She's a naturopathic doctor. Hello, Michaela. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. How has your 2021 been?
Oh my goodness. Well, I would say that it's been better than my 2020, that's for sure. I feel like when you kind of hit the rock bottom of COVID, there's really no way but up. But yeah, it's been really good. Lots of change, lots of exciting developments. So I can't really complain.
That's really awesome. And glad that your year has been going pretty well. And like you mentioned, you know, compared to 2020, I think everybody's having a decently good year. And I would like for the listeners out there, can you please explain your background and what you do?
Yeah. So I am a naturopathic doctor. Basically, what that is, or my job is to kind of treat the patient as a whole person, meaning I find the root cause of why someone has an illness rather than just treating the symptoms. So for example, if three people come to my office with a headache, or I should say if three people go to their family doctor's office for a headache, they might all come out with a prescription for Tylenol because to get rid of that headache. Three people come to see me and they have a headache and I try to find out why. So someone might have a hormonal imbalance, which is causing hormonal headaches. Someone else might have neck tension that's causing a headache. And another person may have inflammation caused by food sensitivities that are instigating those headaches. All of my patients might walk out with a prescription for magnesium, so to speak, because who wants to suffer with a headache if they don't have to? But the root cause of those treatments are all very different. And so my goal is to kind of evaluate every person as an individual, what makes them up, their history, their medical history, their medications that they're on, their mental health and wellness, and kind of build a picture as to what's going on with them and why.
Mm-hmm. And that's really great, because right now, you know, one of the things that's really common in today's age is burnout. And that's mainly because we're doing so many things, in a short period of time. And there's definitely a societal pressure for us to achieve the best that we can in the shortest period of time, because it's like more of a competition right now. And with social media, everyone is just competing to show that they are successful and to get to that point. You know, it's like kind of like a drive for people to do more and more and more. And one of the main things that I really wanted to focus on today is women and burnout. It was International Women's Day a few days ago, and one of the things that people don't really focus on is women and burnout, because, you know, women tend to burn out a lot and no one really gives attention to that. But there's so many reasons as to why. So before we get into the reasons, can you explain on what really burnout is and what are the few signs that we can see and what do people usually don't see?
Mm-hmm. Burnout's really interesting because everyone is so individualistic. So one person's burnout might not look the exact same as another's. But typically what we have is these kind of random, very vague constellation of symptoms that if you look at them individually, it doesn't seem like much. But when you put them all together into context, it's easier for you to look at someone and go, okay, you've got burnout. So basically what burnout is from like mm-hmm. a medical, physiological point of view, your body's constantly getting chronically stressed and constantly being put into that fight or flight kind of state. That kind of reptilian brain gets turned on. And so back in our prehistoric eras, we would see a bear walking through the woods, and all of a sudden we would start sweating and our heart would start racing and our pupils would dilate so we could see better. All of the blood in your system diverts to, instead of your vital organs, to your muscles so that you can fight or flight and survive that. Nowadays, instead of seeing bears in woods, we're accidentally running through red lights. We're forgetting that we have a meeting that we're 5 minutes late to. We've got bills to pay. We've got a worldwide shutdown for 2 months and we have no idea what we're going to do with our lives. And some of us are losing our jobs. All of those chronic stressors are constantly putting us into that fight or flight syndrome. And that's kind of where burnout starts to begin. Oftentimes, symptoms look like the increasing or early development of anxiety or depression, lack of joy and enthusiasm, difficulty concentrating, headaches, feeling irritable all of the time, jaw pain or teeth grinding, because that's where you carry all of your stress, fidgeting, picking with your nails or your fingernails for something to distract your mind with. Poor sleep is something that I see that's most common in most women. So that's either trouble falling asleep, staying asleep, or they're not waking up feeling rested. They're laying in their bed in the morning being like, oh my God, I just hit the snooze button 5 times and I now have to drag my butt out of bed and get myself to work. And I'm counting down the hours until I can crawl back into bed, and they're just wishing their day away because they have no energy. Another thing I see that's really common is they have an increased dependence on caffeine. The only thing that's going to get them out of bed is if they can have 4 cups of coffee in a day, just to get them from point A to point B. Another thing that I see often is intense sugar cravings or salt cravings, or both. Sometimes I see women, they go, you know, after dinner, I really want that ice cream and I'll have it. And then all of a sudden I'm craving chips. I really need that saltiness right after, and that kind of swing. Another thing that's really prominent in most women is that energy crash. Oftentimes people kind of crash around anywhere between 2 and 4 p.m. where I go, okay, so if someone gave you a bed, would you sleep on it? And they're like, yes, in a heartbeat. Please, somebody give me a bed. Like, Google hire me so I can sleep in one of those nap pods is basically what the general consensus. And so women are kind of, we're told that we just need to grin and bear it. That's kind of what society has been telling us for all of our medical mm-hmm. issues, whether it's painful periods and endometriosis or childbirth or now it's burnout. It's just, we're supposed to complain, we're supposed to hurt, we're supposed to be tired for some kind of reason that no one's actually really explained to us. It's just something that we've grown up understanding that that's kind of the status quo.
And, you know, that's something that's really common, like, especially women in burnout, and they don't really, like you mentioned, women are expected to just be tired, and, you know, it's just seen as something that is natural and that's okay. And when women do tend to talk about issues like, you know, period cramps or, you know, either just being tired, they're constantly told that, oh, you know, you can just sleep it off and you'll be fine. But, you know, I want to know more about, in terms of burnout, some people, there are some women especially, they are often constantly tired. Even like I know people who are always tired. Is that just because of burnout, or is there other reasons why they can be tired?
Yeah, often when women come to me, before I just say, oh yeah, it's burnout, I like to kind of do a deeper dive, because there are physiological medical reasons why someone could be chronically tired. It doesn't necessarily always have to be lifestyle, which, I mean, given our, you know, kind of work hard, play harder kind of mindset that our generation seems to be kind of latched onto right now, oftentimes I see them kind of going hand in hand. But the things that I always look for first are nutrient deficiencies. So we look for iron deficiencies, especially in women. Most often women have very low ferritin levels, which is that's the measurement of what our iron stores look like. Given the fact that we menstruate every month and women actually don't eat enough protein in general, our iron levels are tend to be really low, which causes anemia, which causes a lot of fatigue. B12 levels are sometimes very low in women as well, vitamin D. So those are kind of the nutrients that I always want to make sure that before we kind of go into just going, okay, this is burnout, let's look at and see what's going on with your adrenal glands and this, that, and the other, I want to make sure I'm ruling out any kind of underlying pathologies. Another one that we take a look at is your thyroid. Is your thyroid underperforming? Do you have hypothyroidism? Autoimmune disease is something that's extremely, extremely prevalent in women, more so than men. Don't quote me on the percentages, because I will definitely be wrong. Remembering numbers is not my strong suit. But hypothyroidism, specifically Hashimoto's hypothyroidism, is something that happens to quite a few women, which will cause women to be very tired, lose their hair, brittle nails, constipation. So we do blood tests to check their thyroid. The other thing that I always look at is blood sugar. What's going on with your blood sugar? Is it well controlled? Are you spiking and crashing? Because that oftentimes results in that feeling of fatigue in the middle of the afternoon. So making sure that we're preventing any development of prediabetes, which could be causing those issues. The other thing I look at is digestive issues. Does someone have IBS or IBD? If you have an underlying digestive issue, especially with IBD, that you can be bleeding in your intestines, which would cause low iron on top of it. But IBS and IBD is an inflammatory condition of the digestive tract. If your digestive tract is inflamed, you're not absorbing your nutrients. If you're not absorbing your nutrients, you're going to have no energy. So those are kind of the things that I typically look at and want to rule out before we just give someone the label of burnout. Because we don't want to disregard any possible medical conditions that could be underlying. You can still have both. Don't get me wrong. I've met a lot of women that have both. I've had both. But we want to cover all of our bases.
And what aspects of society do you think that causes women to burn out, especially now?
Oh, this is a good question. I've got many of a rant on this one. honestly,
please go ahead.
As women, society programs women to overcommit, overprovide, people please at the expense of our time, at the expense of our education, at the expense of our joy, and oftentimes, unfortunately, at the expense of our own health. Mm-hmm. And then society turns around and shames us for providing self-care for ourselves, or setting boundaries and saying no and choosing ourselves first. And it's just one of those things. I read a book. It's the Book of Burnout by Emily and Amelia Nagowski. Mm-hmm. And they talk about this thing called human giver syndrome. And it's basically what they say is that it's almost just kind of that inequality of women having to take on way more of the household chores, the family burden, the emotional responsibility for people's feelings and making people feel comfortable. And it's way more than men. I'm looking at a stat here that I wrote down because, I again, numbers are not my thing, but I thought that this was really key to say that it's basically women spend 40 hours per week on household chores, childcare, housekeeping, family engagements, and men spend about an hour and a half per week. If I got paid for that, that would be amazing. I don't, even if it was $10 an hour, like, can you imagine? So we do all of that work as women, which means that we don't have time to do all of those things, to sleep in, to relax, to enjoy ourselves, and just be a little bit more carefree, because that 40 hours, that's a lot of time.
And that's, you know, that's crazy, because if you think of it, you know, like, you know, when we come back from work, like working 8 hours, that must be exhausting enough. But coming back home, taking care of kids, taking care of chores. And when women don't do that enough, you know, when they decide to, you know, send their kids to daycare because they're working, you know, they still get hate from society, saying that, you know, you're not doing enough as a mom. And then, you know, they are forced to work more than they can and basically push themselves into exhaustion. And I still don't understand how, you know, women are incredible, and I still don't understand how women do it in terms of doing, taking on both tasks. But I still don't believe that, you know, it's okay to just put this responsibility up to women to, you know, take care of the household chores, take care of your kids, take care of, you know, everything. And especially, you know, what blows my mind is when, you know, people come and say that it's a woman's job to take care of their husbands. And I'm just like, I think that we have enough on our plates to do that. I'm pretty sure a grown-ass person can take care of
themselves. I fully agree. Yeah, I'm like, okay, if you're a human, your responsibility is to take care of yourself. But I find, like, one of the most ironic things when I talked about women about boundaries and self-care and this, that, and the other, like, you get on an airplane and they always say in the safety demonstration, if in the event that, like, the little masks come down, make sure you put your mask on first before you put your mask on anybody else. And I just kind of laugh at it, because I go, well, theoretically, yes, that is how that should work. In all reality, all of the moms are putting the masks on their children first, or they're making sure that their significant other is okay and getting their mask on first. But even just, like, as a metaphor for life, like, women in general, we put other people's masks on before we put our own on. And that, by no means am I saying that, like, you need to shirk all of your personal responsibilities and family duties and this, that, and the other. But I think there just needs to be a little bit more boundary setting. And I think that women need to be kind of empowered to include their significant other in all of the things that she needs to get done. So then that way there's a little less work for her to have to do. Or family, brothers, sisters, this, that, and the other. You don't have to have a significant other in order to have someone share that burden with you. You just need to have friends or family or someone in your life that can kind of help shoulder the burden with you if they can.
And, you know, there's so many, I think society, as well as even movies and series nowadays, they romanticize the idea of women fixing people and, you know, taking care of all the responsibility. And, you know, that is being the ideal woman. And I feel like they kind of put that out there as, like, you need to do all of these things to be the perfect woman, basically. Be the perfect daughter, be the perfect wife. And that's just so much that, you know, at the end of the day, if you're not doing well, then even if your aim is to help others, if you're not doing well, then how are you supposed to help others? You know, you're not in the perfect, you know, you're not in the right mindset, or, you know, right health, or you don't have the ability to take care of your own self, and you're not doing well, then you can go ahead and fix others or help others, even though it should be no one's job to fix people. The thing is that, you know, society has put up so much pressures out for women that they think that saying no or standing up for themselves and setting boundaries is something that they shouldn't do, or they're being selfish if they're doing that. And I want to know your thought on how we can set boundaries to take care of our health and, you know, our mental and emotional and physical well-being.
I think one of the things that I tell my patients is to start listening to your body and start like take a good hard listen at what your body's telling you. Because we spend so much time listening to everybody else and what we should want and what we should look like and what we should think and what we should do to help other people. And now it's time to kind of be a little bit more introspective and take that inwards. You need to start learning what your personal stress threshold is. What stresses me out might not stress you out, and vice versa. So everyone needs to understand where their limits are, what those limits feel like, and be able to pull yourself back from that edge before you push yourself into burnout, or worse, your health just kind of spirals out of control because you've pushed your body too far. Once you've done that, like an empty cup fills none, right? So you need to be able to make sure that you're healthy and your mental health is there in order to be able to help other people. I find that lists are very helpful when you're trying to be a little bit more introspective. Mm-hmm. Goal setting is really important. I always get my patients, and I do this myself, what do you want to get done today? What do you want to get done this week? What do you want to get done this month? Write that down. And if there are things that are being pulling you away from those things, your friends are calling you saying you need to come out for dinner, your family saying that you need to take care of this other person, or you need to go grocery shopping or do this or do that, you need to really look at what's on your list and then kind of say, okay, can I fit this in and still get everything else done? If the answer is no, then you need to be able to figure out a way to say, you know what? I can't, not this week, maybe next week. You don't need to apologize for it. You have things to do, and the only person that lives your life is you. So you're responsible for getting your goals met, right? Nobody else is.
Yes.
Another thing that I like to get my patients to list is, how do they want to feel? Do they want to feel rested? Do they want to feel happy? Do they want to feel loved, joyful? What is that? And then you go deeper and you go, well, what do I need to do to get those feelings? If I want to feel loved, if I have a significant other and I feel like we've been too far apart, or we're not really connecting emotionally, do we need to schedule a date night? If I want to feel rested, okay, well, do I need to make sure that I'm prioritizing my sleep? Looking at those things objectively on a piece of paper and being able to work backwards, I want X, what do I need to do, is super helpful for being able to kind of go over that again and go, okay, if I want to feel this way, I now know what I need to do. And if something comes along my path to try and steer me in the other direction and it doesn't get me where I need to go, now I have a clear idea of what I should say no to and what I shouldn't say no to.
You know, we often see burnout when we are experiencing it, and, you know, towards the, when it's kind of full-fledged, you know, when basically when we literally cannot do anything anymore and we end up feeling really bad, that's when we realize, okay, something is wrong, you know, I shouldn't be feeling this way. But, you know, there's initial stages, and, you know, a lot of people tend to miss that because they only experience it, then they keep pushing themselves more and more, because when you feel tired, instead of taking breaks, they end up pushing themselves more because, you know, they think that, okay, I shouldn't be lazy, I should be doing more, and that just kind of ends up in a full-fledged burnout. But before we get to that whole burnout stage, what can we do to prevent ourselves from getting to a burnout?
Well, other than being introspective, putting those lists together, I guess another point that I did completely miss about being introspective is take note of when you say yes to something, if you feel mm-hmm. some type of way about it. If someone asks you to do something and your automatic reaction is to say yes, and then 5 minutes later you're like, oh my God, holy crap, like I literally just said that and it's the last thing I want to do, It's time to be able to set some boundaries. Say no, sorry, I wish I could, but I have this, that, and the other to do. Or just say, sorry, I don't want to do that. It's an exercise. It's like a muscle. You gotta squeeze it sometimes to make sure that you figure that out. But that's really key for boundaries. But when it comes to lifestyle stuff that I would say to recommend, you need to make sure that you're sleeping. You need to make sure that you make sleep a
Oh,
priority. If
yes.
sleep starts to fall, everything else crumbles
Can't stay
around
up
it
till
because
4
then
a.m.
you're, yeah, exactly. So some of the tips and tricks that I say to people is, again, set a boundary, but set a boundary with yourself. I go to bed at 11 p.m. That means that all of my electronics are off. I'm laying in bed. I'm listening to a meditation, or I'm listening to like a calm sleep story. Matthew McConaughey, like, sing me to sleep, please. Like, just get in on that. When it comes to optimizing sleep, typically what I tell patients is that they need to make sure that they're closing off all of their electronics that have any kind of light or blue light coming off of the screen. So TVs, phones, computers, those need to go away about an hour. I would love it to be two, but come on, I totally understand the screen time addiction. I would say 1 to 2 hours before bed. And that's when you start your sleep routine. That's when you have a shower, take up all your makeup, do your skincare routine, do all of that stuff, get into bed, turn on your essential oils or turn on like some calming music, read a book. You need to unwind. Your brain needs to start to unwind itself in order to become relaxed. Change those brain waves so you can fall asleep. Blue light is really important because blue light basically signals to your brain that it's morning. So if you're trying to get tired and fall asleep and you're sending signals to your brain that it's morning time, you're gonna wake up in the middle of the night. Your brain's all messed up. Your brain's confused. So you want to make sure that you're doing that. The other thing that's really important is actually getting sunlight exposure first thing in the morning. That's going to reset what's called your circadian rhythm. Your circadian rhythm is basically how your body tells whether it's night or day. And all of our body systems, our hormones, our organs, our digestion, our menstrual cycles, all of those things are actually synced with your circadian rhythm. And so we want to make sure that we're starting off on the right foot. So what I like to do in the morning when I have time, and I try to do my best to make time, is my living room is situated southeast, so I get a lot of morning sun. I'll have tea or coffee sitting in front of a window, preferably if you can be outside. I live in Canada. It gets to like minus 30, so sometimes that's not even possible. But making sure that we're exposing our eyes to sunlight first thing in the morning will do a great job of helping just kind of rejig that system. That's really important.
You know, when you talked about blue light, that's one of the things that, people are so, they like to stay on their phones. I do that too, so I'm not, any better. So I like to, people, when they have a long day, they tend to, if I'm not wrong, it's like sleep procrastination. They tend to, think that they deserve that amount of time for themselves. And, they either go on their phones because they see that as the time that they should be sleeping as the time for themselves, because the whole day they have been doing either their jobs or taking care of people. So they think that they deserve this time for themselves, which is true, but at the same time, they are disregarding their sleep and, putting that into a corner and, using their phones, watching videos, whatever it is, social media. So how can they get out of the mindset of, pushing sleep away to thinking that that's how they spend time for themselves?
Well, you keep saying they, and I am one of
Oh no,
they.
I'm
I
definitely
have
one of
definitely
them.
been a sleep. Yeah. We
Definitely
are
one of
both
them.
like, I might be a naturopath. I might be have some of the answers, but I also, doctors make the worst patients. And there are nights where I am watching TV until 1 o'clock in the morning
Oh,
because I
same.
had a long day and I just want to be able to have some time to myself. So I totally understand where that comes from. Basically, what I like to say to people is like, have some self-compassion for yourself. Obviously, they're going to be, it's kind of like an 80-20 rule. That's kind of where I kind of live, is where 80% of the time you're doing what you're supposed to in order to be healthy. And then the other 20% of the time you have fun and you enjoy yourself. So every night, am I staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning watching, I don't know, I'm watching Real Housewives of Atlanta right now. It's addicting. I don't do that every single night because I know that my priority is sleep. I know that I am the worst type of human being if I don't get a good enough sleep. I am miserable the next day. So it's really about focusing on what your priorities are. Do you want to feel better? Then you need to go to bed at a specific time. But some of the tips and tricks to make sure that if you are on your phone later at night or on your computer, there are some kind of gadgets out there that can actually help reduce the amount of blue light screen. So there's filters on your phone that you can put on. So there's dark mode on Apple. I don't even actually use dark mode. I go a step further. You can put a red light filter on your phone where if you click it on the side three times, your phone turns red and it takes out all of the blue light. There's an app for MacBooks and I believe PC computers as well called Flux, F.LUX. You can download it on your computer and it will take note of your location in the world and when sunset is. And throughout the entire day, as it gets darker, your computer screen gets more and more yellow because it takes out the blue light. So those things are kind of really nice to make sure that if you are staying up later, you're doing the absolute best that you can for yourself to make sure that you're not kind of negating your sleep. Another thing is getting glasses that have blue light blockers in them. Mm-hmm. So I have prescriptions. I'm absolutely blind, but I got a blue light filter put on my glasses. You can, if you don't wear glasses, you can buy like lenses with fake, like with no prescription in them that are also blue light blocking. So there's always something you can do to help support yourself, even if you're doing what you're not supposed to do. And I say that with air quotes because I realize we're on a podcast and they might not hear me or see me.
Yeah, because I mean, 100%, I do all of those things. And I make myself believe that just because I put on a filter, I can stay on my phone till 4 a.m., which that's not the thing to do. And even if you have a filter on, you know, that isn't, you know, that's just the one thing that you can do to help yourself. But that's not the ultimate thing that you can, you know, to completely prevent. You still need your sleep. So by saying people, I mean myself. So by all means, I am the most horrible person when it comes to sleep and, you know, setting boundaries with myself and pushing myself to sleep. And one of the things that I really, you know, found it helpful is setting a bedtime timer, is that it goes off on my phone. I know that Apple has this. I'm not sure about Android, but, you know, there's so many apps out there, is that it sets you a reminder saying that, you know, this is the time that you need to go to sleep, and it turns on the do not disturb mode by itself so that, you know, you don't get any messages or calls, so you don't really feel like you have to be replying and responding to people. So it's kind of like an indicator that, hey, go to sleep.
Yeah, oftentimes like those dings from the apps, they're addictive, right? So you don't yes. have to go so far as plugging your phone in your bathroom so you don't want to touch it. Oftentimes just, yeah, turning it on that do not disturb, you think that no one's trying to contact you and you're not really tempted to look at anything. Two more things that I typically recommend for kind of the physical and lifestyle things that women can focus on when it comes to burnout. So the first thing is nutrition. Nutrition is really important. A lot of people find that it's difficult. They think it's an exact science and they need to find the perfect diet that's going to work for them. So they try vegan, they try vegetarian, they do celery juice cleanses, they do these ketogenic fat loss diets. They're doing this, that, and the other. And honestly, first of all, please don't do any kind of crazy fad restrictive diets on your own. See a registered dietitian or a holistic nutritionist or a naturopathic doctor, someone who can walk you through that. Food is medicine. Food changes the way that our DNA codes itself. It changes the way our body composition is. By removing crazy things from your diet, you could potentially be messing with your hormones. If you're not eating enough calories, you can lose your periods. So making sure, literally keep it simple. Whole foods, the least amount of processed foods as possible. If it has a nutritional label on it, try not to buy as much of it. I always tell people, shop around the outside of the grocery store first because that's where you're going to find the whole foods, fruits, veggies, meats, all of that kind of stuff, and then go through the aisles if you need to, and really focus on trying to purchase products that they have a nutritional label on it that has 6 ingredients or less. Less likely to have artificial dyes or preservatives or chemicals or anything like that that's going to kind of disturb your body systems. And start there. The other thing that I say is, like, make sure you're eating enough protein. Typically, the recommendation is 0.8 grams of protein for every kilogram that you weigh. So most women don't realize that they're under eating protein and they need to be focusing on increasing that in their diet. It's amazing when I make sure that women are hitting their protein counts, how fast their energy levels go up, how many less energy crashes they have during the day, and how much better they sleep. Because our body is constantly repairing things. You need protein for that. The last thing that I'll say is that women need to focus on movement. And I specifically say movement and not exercise. For some reason, I don't know, exercise has become a word that has a lot of visceral emotional connection to it, whether that's people are obsessed with it, they always want to try something new, they think that they should be doing it, and that all of those shoulds come with strings attached. I ate a donut today, so I should exercise. I haven't picked up a weight in a week, so I should exercise. Like, there's all of these shoulds. Exercise should never be punishment. So I always say focus on movement. You need to move your body for 30 minutes a day. And you don't, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to sweat off 10 pounds and go to a spin class. What I'm saying is go for a walk, turn on a YouTube and do a free yoga, like, you know, kind of circuit for 30 minutes. Do some stretching, go play tennis with your friend, do some kind of social distance activity, I don't know. But focus on moving your body, and that seems more of like a, kind of like a gentle goal and objective rather than being like, I need to go to the gym, I need to work out. No, you just need to move. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit more compassionate, I find.
I agree with you. You know, I think movement is something that, especially nowadays, is something that is so, you know, just so, we just move past moving. It's especially with last year with the whole pandemic, you know, with everything closed down and not being able to go outside, it kind of conditioned us to stay indoors and, you know, basically stay seated most of the time, eating, sleeping, you know, always in like non-movement situations. But, you know, like you mentioned, it's so hard to get something started, especially exercise or moving around, or even going on a walk can be the most, like, you know, can be the most hardest thing, especially when you're so used to just sitting down most of the time. And, you know, not only that, it's just that most of our days are spent sitting down. It's either in our jobs, you know, most of our jobs nowadays especially require us to be seated for like 8 hours. You know, we barely get like an hour break. Mostly people, you know, some people are on their feet all the time. That's great. But most of the people that I've known, they are always sitting down. You know, come back home, either watch a movie, Netflix, sitting down. And, you know, it's just all of our days are spent just sitting down. So that's one of the main things, you know, that's important, is definitely moving around, at least going on a walk, which can be the hardest thing, like, until you create a habit. I feel like once you get that, you know, the habit out for like 21 days, it really, you know, becomes just like something that comes natural to you. I found that is what works for me, you know, doing it consistently, taking breaks when I do need to, but doing it and not making up reasons as to why not to do it is something that has helped me. Maybe it might help the people listening. And although this women, this episode is mainly focused on women, because, you know, that's something that women don't get a lot of focus on in terms of, like, you know, burnout and tiredness and societal pressures just makes it seem like, you know, they're always have to be on the go. I know that there's still like male listeners listening as well. And do you believe that all the signs and aspects that you mentioned about burnout also applies for men?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. There, when it comes to burnout, those symptoms across gender doesn't matter, or I should say sex, whatever, male, female, whatever chromosomes you have, however you identify, it really doesn't matter. All of those things are uniquely human. And burnout doesn't discriminate. It's just unfortunate that it's mostly women that are a little bit more subjected to burnout. But I think that obviously men experience it too, and I'm sure that there's a little bit more nuance to the mental emotional aspects of where that comes from, because men have their own pressures from society on how they should be, how they should look, how they should act. I don't really have a lot of insight into that specific because I identify as female or as a woman, and so I can only speak to the mental, emotional, societal pressures that I experience. But physiologically, yeah, it's all very similar.
So that they don't get, they don't feel left out. And
You're not left out, guys. You're great.
But I do want to focus on women today because that is, not only my main goal, but to at least to shed some importance on, women and tiredness. And I know half of my friends who are constantly tired and they don't even know why. And I feel like women's health is not, they don't teach enough about women's health in general. Like in school, they didn't teach me anything about, why I could be tired or why, what about mental health, what about taking care of myself. Those are the important aspects that we need, especially now, in this age of filled with technology and, on a busy schedule, we're always on the run and we often neglect ourselves. In terms of physical health, what ways can women stay updated and, get tested on their physical health?
Well, when it comes to getting testing, typically what I say is working with a naturopathic doctor is a great way to utilize, like, figure out what's going on with you health-wise, in conjunction with your family doctor. It's not one or the other. I'm not a Most of the people in my profession would agree with me when we say you should never be picking one or the other. It's about having a team. You need to have a team of healthcare providers, whether that's naturopath, GP, massage therapist, acupuncturist, physiotherapist, chiropractor. All of those people can help you with your health, and it doesn't need to be one or the other. So typically, the difference when it comes to checking physical signs between a family doctor and a naturopathic doctor is that most often your family doctor is looking for illness. So they're looking for a pathology. They're looking for your labs to be outside of the range of what is considered normal. Whereas I look for optimal. So, for example, when it comes to ferritin, the bottom in Canada, the bottom range for ferritin is 20, and then goes upwards of up to 200. If you were to go to your family doctor and you had a ferritin of 25, your doctor would say, "Well, your ferritin's like low, but it's normal, so you're fine." Someone comes to me and I see that ferritin of 25, and I go, "You're a 28-year-old menstruating woman. Your ferritin should be around 60 or 70." And so between 25 and 60, there is a very long range of symptoms that happen in between there where people don't feel normal. They don't feel healthy. They feel tired. They feel exhausted. They're getting heart palpitations. Their hands and feet are cold. Their hair's falling out. All of those things happen. So when it comes to testing, I say use both because you're getting two educated professionals looking for things on different spectrums, but that's great because two heads are better than one.
And I think that's great advice. And one of the another important aspect that I do want to talk about is self-care. And you mentioned some amazing ways that we can take care of ourselves, but there are also a lot of misconception about self-care, especially for women. People like the best thing that I can think of when it comes to self-care that people often talk about, and like I don't think this helps for me, but most people they're like, oh, we pick a specific day and we don't do anything on that day, or I take a bath with the bath bomb and that's how I take care of myself. That's self-care. And that's the most thing that I can, think of, like in terms of what I see on Instagram and a lot of other people, talking about it. But I know that self-care is more than that. So I want, if you can, like, what are the common misconceptions that you have heard, and what are the actual ways that we can actually take care of ourselves?
I think one of the common misconceptions is like self-care is for Sundays, like self-care Sunday, and like, don't get me wrong, take care of yourself whatever day you like. It should be every single day. But if you want to Instagram it and it's a cute slogan, I mean, hey, I've been guilty of like taking an Instagram saying self-care Sunday. It's cute and it's Sunday and I'm taking care of myself, so get off my back. That's totally fine. But when it comes to self-care, I think the common misconception is that, like, A, you need to pick a day. Every day you should be doing something to take care of yourself. And it doesn't need to be this big kind of production of, I bought a brand new bath bomb, or I spent $250 on skincare, or I'm taking myself to the spa, or I'm gonna go buy myself clothes. I mean, don't get me wrong, all of those things can be self-care. I like to treat myself. I'm sure you like to treat yourself. Like, everyone should treat themselves every so often. But I think the misconception is that self-care is something that is special and that is reserved for specific times, and it needs to be something that you buy. I think that's one of the biggest things that kind of bothers me, is the fact that self-care somehow involves purchasing something. And it doesn't have to be that. For me, self-care is me getting home and realizing that I'm really tired today, and so I get in bed at 8 o'clock and I read a book, or I watch TV and I don't answer my phone. I make sure I go to the grocery store so that I can have all of my food prepped for the week, so that I'm not stressed out and eating McDonald's on the way home because I'm starving and I can't wait to make dinner until I get into my condo. I think self-care needs to also include taking care of yourself, booking your doctor's appointments, checking in with yourself on your mental health. Like, am I feeling okay? Am I feeling anxious? Is there something going on with my moods? Are my partner and I getting along? You know what I mean? Like, it's really about more being mindful of what you need to take care of yourself. Shouldn't have to, a bath bomb does not need to be included.
Well, the bath bombs are cool, don't get me wrong. I just don't think that, they should be the
Oh, they're
primary
cute.
aspect. They're definitely cute, and they're so colorful and pretty, but
Exactly. Yeah.
like you mentioned, it shouldn't be
Yeah,
just that.
exactly.
There's so many different ways.
They're optional.
Yes, they're optional. But if you can go and get a bath bomb and you like bath bombs, by all means do it. It's just that there's just that's what is been portrayed as self-care in like social media, and that's what people think, that okay, if I need to take care of myself, I should just get on a bath, or go to the spa, get a massage maybe. All of those things can help, on certain bases, but it's also, like you mentioned, helping yourself on a daily basis and not rejecting your needs. And I think that's in this fast-paced world, it's very, it's easier to just do that, like you mentioned, get McDonald's, and just screw, just forget about your whole food plan that you had made up and you wanted to follow, but it's just easier to get McDonald's. And some days, that's just what you feel like you need because you're exhausted. But at the same time, it's it we can simply easily fall down that cycle, of just rejecting all our needs and the things that we actually wanted to do. So, that's, I think that's great advice. And before we end this,
I
I
love the
do.
way that you said that. Rejecting your needs. Like, that's literally exactly what you're doing. And people need to just take stock in what it is, or what it is that they're rejecting.
Exactly. Thank you. And before we do end this, I do want to know about your experience as being a doctor. And I know that is something that can be incredibly stressful. So, in what ways do you take care of yourself? And when did you realize that burnout was an issue?
Ooh, I realized burnout was an issue when I went through it. In my first year of medical school, I had no idea what I was getting into. I was taking 15 classes in one semester, not a year, a semester. I had 12 final exams in the span of 1 week. You were barely eating, barely sleeping. What you were eating was complete crap because you didn't have time to do anything else, and it was literally just like, do it or die. Throughout med school, I gained 10, almost 15 pounds despite exercising. I would wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning so that I could go exercise because I would be so tired after exercising that I would need a nap. So I'd wake up, go exercise, shower, have a nap, and then go to class. And I would fall asleep in class. I had no control. I felt like literally like my eyelids were just being like forcefully shut. I was experiencing all of the things that we talked about of what burnout looks like. So that's when I knew it was a problem because I was like, what is happening? I don't enjoy my life right now. This really sucks. I need to figure out what's happening. And I was hearing the same story from all of my classmates. And then eventually when I became an intern, I was hearing it from all my patients, and I'm still hearing it today. And it kind of kicked me in the butt, being like, okay, we need to figure out what this is, why it is, and how to do it. So when I was in my second year, I got a little bit better at managing my stress. And again, that looked like movement. It didn't look like getting on a treadmill so I could run off 10 pounds. It looks like making sure I had some self-compassion for the days that I had no energy to eat properly, but trying to optimize my snacks so I had something quick to eat that was healthy, doing things that saved me time, getting like the good food box. In Canada here, we have like the meal prep kits and that kind of stuff. That saved me because I was eating whole foods. It wasn't takeout, it wasn't from a restaurant. Meditating was something that I raged against for probably a good 3 years until I started really enjoying it. It was one of those things where my mind was just so busy all the time that slowing down was something that I didn't enjoy. It made me uncomfortable. And so realizing that slowing down is really important was a hard lesson that I had to learn. But yeah, I think all the things we talked about are things that I practice myself with a sprinkle of that 20% of doing whatever it is that you want that makes you happy and a lot of self-compassion.
And I think that's great that you mentioned medical school and university, because I know that there are so many people who, although last year it was everything was learning from home and through Zoom, I feel like that itself could have caused a lot of burnout. Because at least people could have a schedule when they did go to university and they had that whole day planned. But doing everything in their room and studying in their room and having classes in their room, and it's like a whole cycle that is so easy to go downhill from there. And so I think out of everything, I think last year and even probably now, because they're still in a pandemic and a lot of countries are still under lockdown, which means that everyone is still in that phase of learning from home and Zoom classes. I cannot even, I'm so glad that I graduated way before that, but I can't even imagine
Oh, me too.
going through that. That just sounds like an absolute nightmare. So, you mentioned meditating, and I just wanted to get a little bit on that because I know a lot of people nowadays are raging about meditating, and people listening would probably would like to more know, there are skeptics out there about meditating, or people who do want to try it but they're not so sure about it, or they can't keep their mind still. That's one of the things that I do have a trouble with. My mind has a beautiful, thing about going all the places. And it's just, I want to know more about meditating and what kind of time do you think works out for you? And, for people who are just starting to meditate, what is the good time to start with, like the time amount, so like a 10 minute, 15 minute, 20 minute, an hour, or and what kind of timings in the day, like the start of the day or like the end of the day, and what kind of meditation do you practice? Just to get a little bit on that.
Well, I will be the first one to say that I don't meditate every single day. Typically, What I do is I'll probably do it 3 times a week. And then on those days where I'm really, really stressed, where I feel really wired, I feel really irritated, I just feel like I'm vibrating at a frequency that I'm just like, I'm gonna snap. I don't know what's gonna happen. Those are days that I really utilize meditation as well. And so when it comes to timing, whatever works for you is what works for you. If it makes sense to you to meditate before you go to bed, then do it before you go to bed. If you it makes sense for you to meditate first thing in the morning, do first thing in the morning. I have no idea who has time to do meditation for an hour in a day, unless they're like a professional monk. I do not. I don't even think Oprah has that kind of time in her day. But honestly,
A
even
lot of people don't have an hour.
yeah, but honestly, even 5 minutes is enough because meditation, when done enough, it does change your brain waves. It does allow your body to kind of come out of that fight or flight state that we had talked about before. It allows you to be able to be more resilient to stress because your brain handles it better and doesn't react as much. And it allows you to be a lot more calmer. It's something that it's like a muscle. You need to do it often in order to really be able to practice it and to see the benefits from it. But I'm talking about like the long-term benefits. Even just a short 5 minute meditation every couple days or so, it allows you to just use that as a tool to calm yourself down. It allows you to be a little bit more introspective. Typically the biggest complaint about meditation is I can't still my mind, I can't quiet it. And it's the goal of meditation isn't about making sure that you have no thoughts, because wow, that would be scary. The goal is to be able to allow those thoughts to pass through and you not follow them, right? It's about letting that monkey mind stepping away and almost taking an objective view of what's going on in your mind and just letting things flow. There's many different ways to meditate. You can listen to sound baths, you can listen to guided meditations where people do visual ones where they describe things to you. You can do ones that are there are walking meditations out there for people that don't like to sit for too long. There's so many different things. Some of the apps that I've recommended to patients are like Calm, Headspace, 10% Happier. All of those apps, I have no affiliation with them, but all of those apps are, they often have like a trial period of like a week. So that means that there's four apps that I just mentioned that you could try for an entire month to see which one you like better. And then there's so many free resources on Netflix, or wow, not Netflix, on YouTube. What I was gonna say was that Headspace actually came out on Netflix with a documentary about meditation, which I haven't watched yet. It's on my list, but I've heard it's pretty profound. So if you're interested in meditation, I would start there and watch that, see what you think.
You know, I think that's what you mentioned. You know, like 5 minutes is something that's a good start. You know, I feel like, people, even me, I was so intimidated by the fact that when people were telling me, all right, the ideal time to to meditate is like an hour. And I'm just like, I don't have an hour to spend
No.
that much time to just sit still. And, that sounds probably great, but like, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't have the time and I don't think I have the concentration to sit for an hour to, just meditate. So I think that's something that's really important that you mentioned is like even 5 minutes should be good enough. And there's so many different ways, and thanks for listing out so many amazing resources, and especially the trial periods. You know, people like certain things and some people don't, so I think that's the most important things is trying it out. You know, there's always YouTube as well. YouTube, there's so many guided meditations and everything out there for the people that what works for me is, since I don't like just sitting still with my thoughts, one of the things that really helps me is the guided meditations, because there's someone talking and they're kind of guiding you through that whole process, so it doesn't seem super scary. So I think that could really help if you do want to try meditating. I think that's that's a good start. And I think this has been really great. And thank you so much for joining me. You're doing amazing work. And, you know, I can only imagine how stressful it is being a doctor, and you're spending your time spreading knowledge and educating people, which is really incredible. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you. Well, it was a pleasure to be here. You're very welcome.
Do you have any social medias? Oh, I know you have Instagram, yeah. But is that your preferred social media where you
Yeah, use? That is my preferred social media. So my Instagram is dr.clark.nd. And you can find me there. I'm constantly posting information about women's hormones and burnout. Just check that out. If you've got questions, ask away. If you'd like to hear more about a topic, send me a DM. I'm always looking for things to explain to people that they're interested in. I love teaching, so that's kind of one of the things that I'm really passionate about, which is why this was such a great experience chatting with you.
Thank you so much for joining me, and I'm definitely sure that people will be trying out the amazing methods that you shared. And, you know, burnout is something that we often look past, so thank you so much for bringing light to that topic. And, you know, women especially, not only the fact that it was International Women's Day a few days ago, but I think it's something that, you know, we need to be talking more about is women's health and mental health, emotional health, as well as physical health is something that's incredibly important. So thank you so much for giving your time today. And I had an amazing time talking to you. For the people listening, do check out Dr. Michaela's Instagram. She's posting amazing things and educational aspects, as well as things that we need to think about. And I will see you all next week.